It's live and local on FM 90.9. And on the show today, we have a couple of members of the dulcimer slash zither family. We'll be hearing a mountain dulcimer by a member of the Champaign-Urbana Dulcimer Society, who are among the performers at the Urbana Urbana Free Library's Fairy Tale Ball, which is going to be tomorrow night as a fundraising event with a number of different performers there. And then later in the program, we'll talk with and hear Denise Gill, who is one of the presenters at a conference sponsored by the Russian East European and Eurasian Center called Soundscapes of the Spirit. It actually starts an hour from now and continues today and tomorrow. And she's giving a presentation and also will be one of the performers on this Turkish instrument called the kanun. So we'll hear from both of these women performing these instruments and hear about the Fairy Tale Ball and the conference this hour on Live and Local. I want to play first, however, some music that from which you'll hear from a performer from whom you'll hear more tomorrow on the program, who's a New York Irish fiddler, Tony DiMarco, and he is presenting a house concert on the Piper's Hut concert series tomorrow night. And I mention it now because it's a very small house. They only will take 25 participants, and if you'd like to get tickets to it, it would be good to email Dean Karras now, and it's piperz.hut@gmail.com. That's piperz.hut@gmail.com. And here's a teaser, Tony DiMarco here playing the wonderful Irish air, The Sally Gardens. Actually, I think it's an English tune, but nonetheless, Irish-style air on Live and Local. That was a tune from England called The Sally Gardens, as played here by Tony DiMarco, who's a New York Irish fiddler, also playing baritone fiddle on there, which I hadn't even heard of before, with cellist Natalie Haas. That's from his disc called The Sligo Indians, which is new, and I played it now because even though he's going to be on tomorrow's Live and Local, I wanted to mention that his performance on the Piper's Hut concert series, which is tomorrow night, because it's a house concert and not very many seats available. So if you're interested in hearing him and participating in his workshop at 6:30 tomorrow night, you'll want to contact Dean Karras at piperz.hut@gmail.com. And we will hear from Tony DiMarco on tomorrow's show. But I'm getting ahead of myself because on today's show we have some folks representing the Fairy Tale Ball at the Urbana Free Library. Kathy Wicks is with us from the library, and she's brought with her a member of the Champaign-Urbana Dulcimer Society, who are among the people who are going to be playing and performing other things at the ball as well. So that's tomorrow night. Kathy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Is this the first Fairy Tale Ball, or have you had these before?
Well, this is the third year of the Fairy Tale Ball.
And why a Fairy Tale Ball?
Well, there's a few reasons. It started out as actually a Library Services and Technology Act a few years ago, and it was a Heroes Program was the title of the grant. And as one of the events that we did, through the ingenuity of our staff, they came up with having a fairy tale ball to highlight the library's fairy tale and folktale collection. We have one of the best collections of fairy tales and folktales in the area. So that was one of the reasons. And because it was such a popular event, we had over 1,000 people attend that event in a three-hour period.
Really? Wow.
That we decided to continue it. So we did it last year through a grant, through Target Community Grant, and this year we were able to obtain a private donor to have the ball again. So this is the third year. We're very happy to do it again.
Where is there in the library where you can get 1,000 people?
The library is not typically open on Friday evenings. So what we do is we stay open until 9 o'clock, and the fairy tale ball is all the events happen throughout the entire building.
No
so
kidding.
So we take it over.
And the various events are, well, quite various. You want to talk about some of the groups involved?
We have something for everybody. And truthfully, although we get a lot of children, of course, their parents come along. And it amazes us how children all the way to grown-ups dress up as fairy tale characters. But some of the events that we will have, we're going to have the Ginger Lazar Puppet Show, who will be performing. She will perform Hansel and Gretel. We have storyteller Dan Ketting. Dan Ketting is a local storyteller, but he is very well known outside of the area as well. And he will be telling us some fairy tales. And again, they're for children and their families. The Central Illinois English Country Dancers and their band, the Flatland Consort, will be performing in our auditorium. And they typically do performances, but in this venue, they will be teaching people how to dance. So our entire auditorium is filled with people learning how to do the various types of dancing that they do when they perform.
I really need to get the Flatland Consort in here sometime, because I've been hearing about them for years. And we've probably had members in here in one configuration or another, because so many of these players play in different kind of groups. But we've certainly had some representatives of the Central Illinois English Country Dancers and other country dancers in the area. And Dan Ketting is another one. I've been hearing his name for a long time, and I haven't heard him tell stories yet.
Wow. Come to the ball.
Kathy Brinkman, I think, often works with
That's
him.
That's right. She's the Champaign-Urbana Storytelling Guild, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
What else?
Well, we will be having other performers. Of course, the Champaign-Urbana Dulcimer Society, of which Diane is a member of. They will be performing the Illini Juggling and Unicycle Club, which this is their third year performing for the ball. They will be performing out on Cherry Alley, which is south of the library. Obviously, we can't have unicycles in the library, but they'll be performing outside the building. And the jugglers are quite amazing, and they'll be performing outside as well, kind of greeting people as they arrive to the ball. And we have a fortune teller who is actually, we call her Madam Zitron, but her name is Liz Zitron. She's a librarian, and last year was her first year doing it. She had such a wonderful time, she agreed to come back. She's a natural, so she has agreed to come back and do it again for us. So, we will have story tents throughout the library where we'll have people from, actually, I believe it's from Dan Ketting's class. They're actually going to be reading stories to children, because, again, we're highlighting the fairy tale and the folktale collection. And we'll have games and crafts for children as well.
Now, is this a fundraising event, or is it just an event?
No, it's not a fundraising event. This is a free event. Most, I would say 100% of the events at the library are free events. And this is actual free event, which is why we have to obtain funding. And it was, like I mentioned, it was amazing to us to see how many people attended this. And when you ask people, they say, you know, it's been a long winter. And this year, we can say that. And a long, cold winter, it is an event that they can do on a Friday night. There's not a lot of things for parents and their children to do together as families. And that's what we have been told. So this is an event that obviously has been wanted in the community. And it's a celebration of spring, a celebration of folk tales and fairy tales. And it's something for families to do together.
Tell me something about the name of the library, because I grew up in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, where on the square in Chambersburg, and they do have squares there, they have a library I used to go to called the Coyle Free Library. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have the Champaign Public Library. Mm-hmm. Here you have the Urbana Free Library.
Right.
That term must mean something particular.
Free is the Urbana Free Library is a historical name. The term free comes out of prior to there being public libraries. Libraries were by subscription, and people had to pay to become a member. And the Urbana Free Library was formed as a free library where you did not have to have did not have to be a member to come to the library. So you'll see things. It's Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, the Philadelphia Free Library. They're historical names So the Urbana Free Library, of course, is historical and very traditional, so we have kept that name.
And, of course, now most libraries are free, but yeah, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad I asked the question.
Yeah, I'm glad I knew the answer.
Yeah, really, that doesn't always happen, does it?
No.
I usually ask questions that the people know the answers to. I mean, I try to ask things that I would think you would know the answer to. Well, you brought along a member of the Dulcimer Society, Diane, and I didn't write this down again.
Diane Hillard.
Hillard. I knew mm-hmm. it started with an H. I'm writing it down this time so I can say who you were when you're done. Tell me about the Champaign-Urbana Dulcimer Society. I didn't know until I saw the announcement of this event that there was such a thing.
Sounds pretty fancy and formal, but it's mostly a group of people who get together to jam, people who like to play the dulcimer, who may want to play the dulcimer but don't know how yet. And we meet once a month at the Urbana Free Library, and anybody who is interested is welcome to come and play. And we also welcome other acoustic instruments, whatever people want to bring and play.
So if you want to... Do you have to have a dulcimer
no.
in order to come?
Nope.
Are there other ones sitting around there?
You can come and try mine.
Well, there you go. Well, uh-huh. there are different kinds of dulcimers. I asked you when you came in. I mm-hmm. I know about the hammered dulcimer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard of the mountain dulcimer, but I'm not sure I've actually seen one before. That's what you've got, right?
Here it is.
Yeah, too bad we're not on TV, and it's not very helpful to the people out there. But, yeah, it looks nice. Well, it's much narrower than the hammered dulcimer.
Yeah.
Many fewer strings.
Yeah. It's not exactly like a fiddle, but the one I have is sort of hourglass-shaped. If you took a fiddle and you pulled it out and stretched it, it would get thinner and longer. This is the Kentucky dulcimer style of dulcimer. Others are shaped like ellipses or teardrops or even just rectangles.
Yeah, this one really, that's a good description. Take a violin and stretch it.
Yeah, but the main thing about it is that it has essentially three strings.
Essentially three strings.
It can have any number, but you play it as if it had three strings. They may have courses of two or more strings, but it's played as though it had three strings, a melody string, a middle string, and a bass string.
So is that kind of like a 12-string guitar where you're really playing as though it has six strings?
Yes.
So very similar.
Yeah.
Well, you brought it here, and you have some picks in your fingers. And
I have a pick, which is a very convenient substitute for the original turkey or goose quill. And I have a piece of bamboo in the other hand. We call it a noter.
From here, it looks like a cigarette, actually.
Actually, I cut it off the end of a paintbrush. But anyway, bamboo is a good noter. It slides easily.
Noter, that's a term I
haven't heard.
N-O-T-E-R. Yeah.
You could call it a stick. Some people call it a stick.
Is that kind of like a, what do you call the thing in the guitar that goes across the top to put it in a different key?
That's a capo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you use it similarly or not?
People nowadays can use a capo on their dulcimers in the more progressive style of playing.
Well, let's have a sample.
Okay, but no capo, please, because this is the real basic old traditional style of playing with a noter and a pick and playing just on the melody string. The other strings are drones. Makes it easy to play.
Immediately wanted to launch into a song that I don't know the name of. I mean, it doesn't matter what the name of it is.
Does it sound familiar?
Well, it sounded like Go Tell Aunt Rhody is what it sounded like.
That's what I was trying for, yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, it didn't even matter what the song was. As soon as you started playing, I could just imagine a singer sort of twanging along, probably, in a particular sort of mountain style of singing.
Oh, yes. Dulcimer sounds great backing up a singer.
Yeah. Do you have singers that come to the society? Sessions? Do you call them sessions? Meetings?
Jams, meetings, whatever. We have a few people who can be encouraged to sing, and it really helps a lot. It sounds great.
Yeah, I would imagine. And how many folks are in the society and how many show up at a
typical
jam?
It varies because it's such an informal group. We don't take roll. It can vary from sometimes two people show up in bad weather to 15 or even sometimes 20 when we have a house concert and somebody is visiting from outside and will play for us.
So you do bring outside people to for
yes.
things
yes.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how many are likely to show up or won't you really know at the Fairy Tale Ball?
I would say about six or seven people.
And is there a range of ages of people who are in the group?
Yes. Oh, geez. I hate to talk about this. I would like it to be a nice big range of ages, but right now it's a pretty narrow range. We got a lot of little old ladies in the group, and we would love to have little old men and and young.
Just for starters.
Yes,
huh?
That's a good start. And we'd love to have young people. We just love it. And we have had in the past, of course. It varies a lot.
Well, it seems a little bit surprising to me that maybe you don't, because I'm just thinking of the folks who've been on this program, which for those tuning in is in fact live and local, over the year, a little year and a month that we've been doing the show, and we've had a lot of traditional instruments of various kinds, various traditions,
mm-hmm.
a lot of old-time fiddling and other things, and the mm-hmm. age range of these performers has been quite wide. I'm just thinking of some of the traditional Irish players who've been in here have been quite young, you know, early 20s.
Yeah.
And it just seems almost that it seems that it's becoming more common for young folks to get interested in the older traditions. So why not the dulcimer? You guys need to do some marketing.
Not enough challenge for them. Maybe it's very easy to play.
Well, I think that would be an appealing aspect of it.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
we would just love to have more people come to the group. Yeah.
I'll bet you brought us another tune.
Oh, I'll play something else. Let's see.
We'll get Kathy to sing with you, right?
If she, I don't know if there are words to this. And if she knows them, she's
welcome. I promised everyone I wouldn't
sing
on the radio when I told them I was going to be here.
Now, I'm just looking at that instrument. You said there are essentially three strings.
That's right.
But you
Mine
have
has three.
Five tuning pegs.
Oh, you're not supposed to look at that.
But I am looking at that.
What does that mean? when I bought the dulcimer, it had five strings. It had a double bass, an octave apart, for added volume and interest. It had the single middle string, and it had a doubled melody string for added volume. But over the years, I've discovered it's a lot easier to play finger-picked and corded versions of dulcimer tunes if I have just the three strings. Because double strings, you just have that much more room for making mistakes and mushy sounds.
So you do some finger-picking?
Yeah.
You were hoping I wouldn't ask, right?
I really do a bad job of it, but that's why I changed to three strings this past year.
Well, we'll leave you what you feel you do well with. So how's that?
Is that fair? Really well with bringing friends along to play.
Well, I enjoyed that sound.
The nice thing about a dulcimer is you can play different parts together. So different dulcimers play different parts by harmony together. what else? The old dulcimer is not set up for cording and finger picking. In fact, the old dulcimers often had frets just under the melody string, so you couldn't cord.
Yeah, here you've got the fret all the way across,
yeah,
but you're just putting the noter on
the
melody.
I just slide the noter up and down. And one of the neat things about the traditional sound is that you can hear this squeaky slide. I don't know if you can hear it or not.
Sure, yeah. What is it like on a guitar? You know, often hear somebody moving around and you hear
the
finger slide.
The guitar squeak is something they want to tone down, but with the noter slide, that's actually considered good.
Part of the style.
Yes, and the clack of the pick, especially if it's a goose quill, that's part of the rhythm.
The percussive effect.
Making a lot of noise.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Helps you stomp your feet.
Yes.
Yeah. Diane Hillard of the Champaign-Urbana Dulcimer Society, who are among the performers at the Urbana Free Library's Fairy Tale Ball, which is tomorrow night from 6 to 9 at the library, which is on Race Street.
Actually, we're on the address is now Green Street.
Oh, is it?
Our front door and our entrance and our parking lot are on Green, so it's 210 West Green Street.
That's right, since you built the new addition several years ago now, I guess.
It was 2005.
Kathy Wicks is with us from the library, and I note here that folks are encouraged to, I'm quoting from your publicity material, wear your finest ball gown, your shiny suit of armor, or dress as your favorite fairy tale character.
Yeah, that's right.
Do most people do that?
Yes, they do.
How many
Absolutely.
Shiny suits of armor do you end up with?
We get a few. Actually, we were talking on the way over is that there was a little girl that is the daughter of one of our employees who wouldn't hear of coming as a princess. She came as a troll. So we get a variety of things from children dress up as wolves, but get a lot of princesses. That's a big thing right
now. I would expect that. Well, I thank you both for coming in, and I hope it's a successful event. The weather's supposed to be good. Mm-hmm. And, Fairy Tale Ball tomorrow night from 6 to 9 in Urbana at the free library, non-subscription library, as we just learned a bit ago. Coming up, an instrument called the kanun, which is a Turkish type of zither, which is plucked, has a whole bunch of strings. We'll hear about it and hear it from Denise Gill in just a very few minutes. Our program on Live and Local today is made possible with support from Eastern Rug Gallery, offering over 1,000 guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs made of pure wool or silk pile. Eastern Rug Gallery also offers a cleaning and repair service, Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. We also have support from the Illinois Chamber Orchestra presenting Got the World on a String, featuring harpist Julia Jameson, this weekend with the music of Debussy, Rossini, and more, Friday at St. Agnes Church in Springfield and Saturday at the Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. Performances at 7:30 p.m. Information is at ilsymphony.org. And it's time to donate your CDs, records, DVDs, tapes, and working stereo equipment to the Vintage Vinyl Sale for the Illinois Radio Reader. You can just take your donation to any Busey Bank office in Champaign, Urbana, or Savoy. For more information, call Dean Geiken. The number is area 217-333-6503. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's a bit from the Mystery of the Bulgarian Voices, which was probably some years ago, and they're still performing here on Live and Local. And just sort of by way of a prelude to a conference being held starting in about half an hour at the University of Illinois by the Russian East European and Eurasian Center, which we are going to hear about right now here on Live and Local from Denise Gill, who is one of the presenters in that conference. On this portion of Live and Local here on FM 90.9, we have a guest who's a little different topic from what we usually have on the show, because she's actually representing a very academic-sounding conference that's going to be at the University of Illinois. It actually starts tonight, this afternoon at 1 o'clock. The REEEC Annual Center Conference, which I will let Denise Gill explain a little bit. She is actually PhD candidate studying in ethnomusicology. She also teaches at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And some rather interesting topics that she has covered, in particular having to do with Turkish music and other music of the Ottoman Empire. And she's brought a very interesting looking and sounding instrument, which I will also let her talk about. In any event, thanks, Denise, for coming in before I know you've got a big presentation today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin, for having me. It's a very exciting moment for me to be here. As you know, I'm getting my PhD at the University of California in Santa Barbara, but I'm actually an alumna of the University of Illinois, and I came here and actually studied ethnomusicology with Donna Buchanan, who's a professor here in ethnomusicology and was a former director of the REEEC, the Russian East European and Eurasian Center at the university here, which is really paving the way in terms of fostering new perspectives for this particular geographical region of the world, new ways of teaching, new ways of research in a very interdisciplinary way. So it's very exciting for me personally to be back to meet with old colleagues, get new information, and share my work. So
and
thank
Donna
you for having me.
Sure. Well, it's a pleasure. And Donna is one of the faculty organizers of this.
Correct.
Exhibit.
This is all faculty organized, and the two main organizers are Donna Buchanan and also Gabriella Curry, who's an assistant professor in musicology at the University of Minnesota.
And the whole conference has an equally intriguing title that will require some explanation, Soundscapes of the Spirit, Cosmology and Sound Art, From the Black to the Aral Seas.
Yeah, so basically the idea is we're dealing with a particular Eurasian region. And we think about this region because it's joined together by similar histories. Soviet Union, for example, previous imperial histories, maybe Ottoman, different types of religious groups, Zoroastrianism, Christianity, Islam, right? All of these different types of local and transnational now today spiritual forms. And what we're trying to do is have a conference that's very interdisciplinary in nature, bringing important scholars from all over the world, actually, to the University of Illinois to talk about sound, to talk about this area of the world and the connection with spirituality, social identity, by looking at sound art.
Sound art as a distinct from music.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing because we think about music often in terms of a form or in terms of music that begins and ends. Maybe it's bound in space and time. Some of the papers, for example, Donna Buchanan's, is looking at bells. My paper, in fact, deals with only one sound, which is both a sound and a word. It's the word who. And I can talk about that a little more. The idea here is that sound, generally conceptualized, is something that can mark time. It's something that is a way that we can trace or connect a social world to spirituality. We can connect through sound political conflict with, again, religious practice. So looking at sound as this pivotal expression of the divine, but also of the social, and navigating that continuum.
You can even talk particularly about your paper or your research generally. And I don't mean to be... I'll just ask the question. Would you apply this, what to me sounds like a very academic way to look at this, to people's real lives?
Interesting. So I guess I could say that we have the very, very first word of this conference title is the word soundscapes. And that's the idea that sound makes up our spaces and places. So at the university, right, going back to that example of bells mark time. They tell us when we need to move from point A to point B. I like to think about, you know, music. We have an idea about music in the everyday or music in everyday life. How do maybe a particular, the song, for example, like a national anthem, how does that signify social, a national identity and national consciousness? But we start a sporting event, for example, with the national anthem, that marks something, it begins something, but it also brings in other issues of that are important, of power, of again, identity and community building.
Well, I was thinking you mentioned the bells, and not only do they mark time, but they also can make announcements or
even
pronouncements.
Right, and who gets to have bells? So I like to also think of an example of, you know, we hear church bells a lot in America, but do we hear the Muslim call to prayer? Right, we don't hear that, and it's not that there are all these politics involved about, you know, the history of our country and what sounds have been part of the founding of the nation and all of this. So, but in a place like Turkey, time is marked differently, five times a day, with that very important call to prayer, the ezan.
And if you are a Muslim in America, you know there is a call to prayer. It's just not
exactly
public.
It's not something that is that you're engaging with regularly. You know, you're not shopping and you hear it, right? It's a little different.
Let's talk just briefly a little bit more about the conference itself. This is open to the public, right?
It is open to the public. Please come.
And there's no charge.
There is no charge. No, it's basically, it begins today at 1 at the Levis Faculty Center, which, if you could refresh my memory, I believe it's right by ISR and Krannert. So it's the corner of Illinois and I think...
Well, it's not really on a corner. Well, what is that?
It's
California.
By the Arc. Yeah,
it's not California. I always forget what that street is.
It's basically, it's basically the northeast corner of Krannert, across from that.
Yeah,
it's
between
Levis
Goodwin
Center.
and Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
If you're on campus, you probably know where it is.
Yes.
So the remarks are at 1 o'clock for 10 minutes. And then the first session actually involves you, among other people.
Yes, it does. I'm excited to. It's a great honor to be able to open the conference.
Well, we'll come to that. There's a couple of keynote addresses.
Yeah.
One is at 4:30 today, and then the conference also is tomorrow from 9 to 6. And the second keynote address will close things.
Correct. So if I could just take a moment, because both of our keynote speakers are very influential scholars in this region. The keynote speaker today at 4:30, from 4:30 to 6 p.m., again in the Levis Faculty Center, is by Jean Dureng, who's a French scholar who's done primarily a lot of work in Iran, in the Persianate world, and has lived there for many years, decades, actually, I believe. And he's the director of research at this very important French National Center for Scientific Research, the Ethnomusicology Division, and has written important books on the art of Persian music and many CD liner notes. Is a very important person. And his talk is called On the Action of Music Between Myths and Facts, and he's basically looking at the effect of music on human beings. So trying to think about a biological, a psychic, an emotional effect, and connecting a Persian or a Muslim Sufi worldview about what music does and kind of the Western, more scientific approach about music's effects on the body.
That's
and the
a
person.
Huge topic.
It's a huge topic. It's going to be interesting. He's got an hour and a half, so...
And that'll probably barely scratch it.
Hopefully it'll end with questions. I look forward to it very much.
And then tomorrow evening, or tomorrow late afternoon.
Yeah, tomorrow, Friday the 9th of April at 4:30, is Theodore Levin, Ted Levin, who is, again, a very important person in ethnomusicology. He's a professor in humanities at Dartmouth College, and he has two very important books on music in Central Asia, music in Tuva, and is also, in the past, has served as the executive director of the Silk Road Ensemble. So he is someone that knows all about the Silk Road, has worked with Yo-Yo Ma, and is very well known in terms of his work with organizations and with different types of outreach, community roots, grassroots types of music organizations. And his talk tomorrow is called Music, Spirit, and Nature in the Age of Hybridity. And that's kind of a fancy way of looking. He's looking at this idea of cultural heritage in Central Eurasia. And what we're seeing is a lot of new nation states in this kind of post-Soviet era are promoting the idea of cultural heritage. And in doing so, often exclude tradition-based spirituality and tradition-based musics that don't go along with the ideas and the kind of beliefs of the nation state. And he's kind of showing that contestation and asking some questions about what we need to think about when we approach, you know, cultural heritage and all of these, you know, traditional music, the way that it's packaged by nations.
A little bit of politics.
Yeah, a little bit of politics and a little bit of music, and looking again at that connection between sound and spirituality.
Now, how about your topic? I was reading your abstract, and I have to say it was a little hard to follow. If you're not into, fairly minute explorations. I mean, in the case of one word, as you said earlier, your particular topic focuses on one word, the word of who, which has all kinds of meanings and implications and musical references.
Yeah, it's a very exciting topic, and as you mentioned, it does seem, very specialized. The people at this conference are very specialized in our region and in our areas, but we also were sharing things that we don't know to each other as well. So I think that anyone that would be interested would very much warmly invite you all to come, and we're going to have great musical and video examples that, you can't access really anywhere else. So it's pretty exciting for that reason. My paper is about the sound, again, who, which we write, H-U. And so it's not who. It's not, who, what, where, why, how, but it's the sound who. And the sound who is very important because it's actually one of the names of God. So in Islam, we have the idea of 99 names of God. And these names are things like Haq, which means truth, right? Or just names that have these adjective qualities, a quality of God, 99 of them. But who, two names, who and Allah, are the two names of God that combine all of those qualities. So already, as a word, it's weighted down with having all of these descriptions of God. It's considered a great word to name God. Then we see it in Turkish music in particular, in Sufi music, in Turkey today, being used all over the place. People will do something called a pulling of the hu çekmek, which is where they'll basically just chant. They'll just go hu, and they'll just breathe it as long as they can. And a lot of people will quickly make the assumption, there's a connection between something like hu and then something that we might be more familiar with in America because of the yoga craze, like om.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can see right away that there's connections here, issues of music, trance, music and ecstasy, music and the ability of sound to affect us. But hu, it appears in poetry, in songs, in religious songs, in proverbs, but it's also a technique used to play the Turkish reed flute, which is called a ney. When ney players play it, they literally blow into the flute playing hu. And I'm trying to show that hu is a type of a spiritual labor. What that means is it's kind of just a fancy way of saying that people say hu in their daily lives and do it mindfully to purposefully connect their sense of this, their life right now, their mundane everyday or their music making, to a more divine or sacred center. And so they're really seeing or bringing that idea of who as something as like God in us. And this is something that hasn't really been talked about in scholarship dealing with Turkish classical music, because the people that study Sufi music are really looking at the big forms. They're looking at whirling dervishes, for example. We all know the Semazen, which is the Mevlevi. It's a Sufi sect in the big white skirts, and they turn, the whirling dervish dance. That's something that might be familiar to us. And no one has focused, for example, on a single sound yet. And I'm trying to show that something as small as a single sound in a word can have all of these deep meanings that show a local philosophy about living, a local philosophy about social identity, and is something that is used in daily life in a very meaningful way.
For those folks such as myself who hear terms like Sufi and think, oh, I know that term, but I'd actually have to look up what is it.
Yeah, it's a great term. We use it, but we don't always know. I think that the best way to explain it is people talk about it as the mystical dimension or the mystical practice of Islam. And Sufism is something that came out shortly after, actually, the founding of Islam. And a lot of there's a lot of variations. So there's a lot of divisions within Sufism. And Sufism often is just a very general blanket term, like, Islam might be, that it doesn't really explain the various divisions of a particular Sufi sect or a Sufi order. So But it's basically, these are people who see music making, poetry, these other artistic forms, often in terms of Islamic calligraphy or other types of miniature painting, as ways of, again, doing religious practice. So art as a way of transcending to a higher spiritual place.
You've brought along an instrument with you, which is the instrument you play. I mean, there may be others as well, but and it's a kind of a zither. What do you call it?
Yeah, it's very exciting to have brought this today. This is the Turkish classical kanun. That's spelled K-A-N-U-N. And the word kanun, actually, we get the English word canon from the same root. So it has to do with this instrument, as you can see, zither-like. It's a trapezoidal shape, and it sits on my lap, and I play it with finger picks. And it has, as you can see, many strings, 73 strings to be exact. And it has that connotation with the English word canon, meaning, you know, body of works or the kind of ordering of a discipline, because it's seen as a really good instrument to demonstrate music theory, because you could see all the strings. On the left, you see here that I have these little bridges. So, Kevin, if I could just take a moment and show that on this one pitch, for example, let me start on the Western note G sharp, that from G sharp to F sharp, for example, for in a whole tone, we divide that with only one separate pitch. If we think about a piano, right, we've got three notes. And what we have actually in Turkish music, because of the makam or the modal system, we have a lot more divisions in there. There are many different modes in Turkish music or music of the Middle East in general than there are in Western music. So instead of just going with these pitches, which is what we have on a piano, for example, between those pitches.
We would call them half steps.
We would call them half steps in Western music. We have this many, and I have these little bridges that with my left hand I flip as I play. So here we go. Again, that same, what we divide into two half tones in Turkish music goes like this.
How many was that?
That was actually 12.
In the space of what we normally would have as two.
Correct. So it's a different way of conceptualizing music. A kind of way I tend to explain it to people is that on a piano, for example, in Western music, just based on the history, we really value chords. We value the idea of harmony. We like that, right? We like the chords. And in Turkish music, in makam, the modal system, you don't have that as much because it's more based on a very complex melody with very different intervals. The intervals are more complex, but because of that, you can't put all these notes together in chord forms. So, for example, if I have a makam called Uşak, pitches that I just played right there don't exist in the Western piano, for example.
But most of them, what you were playing, you could do.
Correct. So I'm never going to throw all those microtones together at the same time. So when I go back to that pitch where I played all those 12 divisions, right, you're never going to hear those next to each other. It would be too clustered. It would sound too close together.
Is it fair to say that the microtones are used as embellishments, or is that too simplistic?
It's not. No, I wouldn't call it simplistic. They're very serious notes. So you, for example, might have sometimes a scale that actually begins on one. So that's here's a pitch that we have on the piano. But basically two Pythagorean commas after that, so basically almost a half flat after that is this note.
So most Westerners are going to hear that the way I heard it, which is that, oh, that pitch is just flat.
Yeah, it's out of tune. Out of tune.
I was listening yesterday to something on, it had to have been WFT because in town because nobody else plays that kind of music. And it was, I don't even know if they said what country it was from, but it was one melody, a melodic instrument. Actually, it was a violin. And it all sounded out of tune to my ears. But it was purely melodic, and I was imagining my mother, who does not have the best attitude towards things that are not Western. she's a musician, and I could just imagine her saying, "Well, you know, that's not a melody, or that's not in tune, or that's not music."
Right, right.
Which really expresses an extraordinarily chauvinistic, jingoistic. Jingoistic is the wrong word, but, you know, attitude towards something you don't understand.
Right, right.
But you just explained something to me that I didn't know. You also said earlier something about names for God in Islam.
Uh-huh.
And I only knew about the one.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know there were 99 or
whatever. Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, is that it's not that these notes don't exist in Western musics. They do, actually. For example, my father is a blues musician. And my mother is a singer, and, you know, if you're a singer, you know sometimes when you're singing with a chorus, you might be changing your tuning a little bit. It might not exactly always be what the piano is doing. That's because you're adjusting to your ear. The blues, for example, always have that important third degree. I've not really played blues on this instrument, but... If I'm thinking about, you know, Muddy Waters or any of these blue guitars, they're always pulling that string. They're not staying in those frets in a very clean way. They're going, right? It's
the
part of the
note.
Aesthetic. It's the blue note where we get the word blues.
And, if you're playing a Western string instrument, you're going to have vibrato.
Correct.
You're going to have glissando, which is a slide in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lots of other terms for those things, so... Yeah, those notes are there. So this instrument, you were talking earlier about Sufism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that this is an instrument common in the musical expression of the faith.
There are some, again, there's so many different types of Sufi orders. And some orders, for example, just use song, just use singing, you know, or recitation of poetry, and maybe just a drum. Some get very elaborate. The music, the Sufi tradition and the musical tradition that I am most familiar with is the Mevlevi tradition, which is, again, something that in the West we tend to associate with those whirling dervishes. And so this instrument, the kanun, is part of the Mevlevi music ensemble, and it's accompanied by the ney, that reed flute. And then that reed flute ney is the most important instrument of the group. But I've been very fortunate to tour, actually, playing this music with some wonderful fine musicians, and learn that tradition. So it is something very important to that particular ceremony. And in general, you know, playing religious songs, playing something that's called ilahi, the religious hymns, something like we have hymns that we might sing along with in a church or in a particular occasion at home, or we might have jamming nights. You know, there are nights that happen, house parties in Istanbul that happened all the time, and we would just be playing these songs together. So, yeah.
And I bet you brought a sample for us.
I did. I will excuse myself and not sing this morning because it's a little early, and I have a lot of a long day. But what I thought I would do is play something that, to again, the Western ear, sounds very. I hope indeed that it sounds very beautiful to you. It's in a mode or a maqam called Nihavent. And Nihavent is very similar to the Western natural minor scale. So if I just play it for you really quickly. So those there are the pitches that form that scale. But I'm going to play a very brief improvisation in that mode. And then I'm going to play just the very beginning of a piece written by a composer named Mesud Jamil. And it's a saz samaisi. It's an instrumental suite in this mode. And I like to play it because I think that, again, the melody will stick with you. I think it's a beautiful melody that we can all appreciate, and I hope you enjoy it, Kevin.
We're listening to Denise Gill, who is among the several presenters at the conference by the, remind me,
Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center.
Which is happening beginning today at 1 o'clock until about 8 o'clock, counting the reception this evening, and then it happens again tomorrow from 9 to 6. Everything is at the Levis Faculty Center on the University of Illinois campus and is called Soundscapes of the Spirit, Cosmology and Sound Art from the Black to the RLCs. And Denise is playing on this instrument whose name I have lost again.
Kanun,
K-A-N-U-N. And the scale, I saw the spelling of this recently. It's M-A-Q-A-M.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's makam. Often in Turkish, it's spelled with a K, M-A-K-A-M, but it's the modal system. It's the modal system that you can find in Turkey, in the Middle East. The Turkish makam system actually has over 150 different modes. We tend to have, like, major, minor, right? And a lot of difference.
So, any skill on Live and Local.
Thank you. So that was a brief example of something that I think we can warm up to, because there is those chords that sound familiar to us, and it's the notes all sound familiar to us.
Well, I found actually at least three points of reference personally. One was to the harpsichord.
Hmm.
One was to the lute.
Mm-hmm.
And one was to film.
Hmm.
because I just, I mean, I just had some visual transportation all of a sudden when you replayed certain passages there to any of a number of films where you do hear non-Western music, usually in a context of some sort of Eastern country, non-Western country, but I'm thinking particularly Arabic regions of the world, which, you know, is becoming more and more common in films.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. We have histories. You know, Hollywood since the 1930s has really given us this sound, for example.
It's
augmented second that...
It makes it sort of stereotypically exotic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, I'm really glad you were able to come in today. And will you be playing your instrument during your portion of the conference?
I will not.
At all?
It's not as directly related to my topic. I have some video I'm going to be showing. I will be playing at the reception at 6 p.m.
Oh, wonderful.
With some other wonderful musicians. There are some excellent local musicians here, so I have the opportunity to have that live music experience with people from the U of I community today.
If you want to hear more from Denise, that's reception is tonight at 6 o'clock, but the conference starts in less than an hour at 1 o'clock, and her a portion of it is shared with a few other people, including one of the presenters, one of the organizers, Gabriella Curry, and that's at 1:10. And session one, Spirit, Sentiment, and Power, Soundscapes of Belief. It's all part of a two-day conference at the University of Illinois in the Levis Faculty Center called Soundscapes of the Spirit, Cosmology, and Sound Art from the Black to the RLCs. And you've made it clear, Denise, that as academic as that may sound, there's will be plenty for people to latch onto.
I hope so, and I do hope that all of the listeners can come. We would love to have you and have discussions with you and share.
And it's free.
Yes, it is free and should be fun.
Denise, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. Have a great day.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. And we have support for our show today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. On tomorrow's Live and Local, we've mentioned earlier, we'll have Irish fiddler from New York, Tony DeMarco, and also Roy Zimmerman, who is going to be at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center on Saturday. Real American Songs, he called them. They're sort of political satire. It's WYLL-FM and HD Urbana.